everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of 90s Court. I am your host, Lisa Monahan, and there is not an Andy. Oh, there's a ringtone on the other end.
God,
that's Andy.
It.
He's calling. No, it's fine. Keep it. No, this is how we're doing this. On the line, we have Gabriel Harbor. Is it okay to use your full name? Because I couldn't start over if you don't want to use your full name.
No, my full name is perfectly acceptable. I've been using it for 34 years, so.
Well, that's going really well for you. Gabriel Harbor is a fan of the show and a friend of mine. We are both chasers, and he is a supporter of ours on Patreon/ just a good old-fashioned dude. And I was like, look, Andy is so busy this week. I don't want the magic to end. I don't want it to stop. I'm going to reach out to someone that I think would be a good fit to co-host with me. And so, Gabe, you got the call, like the lifeline on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Was that the show?
Yeah, that was a 90s show too, right?
Probably. It was just bad enough that I think it was. So Gabe answered the call and said, yeah, sure, I guess I can do that. So Gabe, do you want to introduce yourself to the audience real quick?
Sure, but before we get into that, does that make you or Andy Regis Philbin?
I'm always Regis.
Okay.
And Kathy Lee. So he was not on the show.
So yeah, my name is Gabriel, and in a former life, I was a professional podcaster. I'm sure that I've went downhill quite a bit since then, so don't have your expectations set too high. And okay. I'm very honored to have this opportunity. In fact, I was thinking a lot about what it meant to try to fill in Andy's shoes, because obviously he's incredible. You're both incredible at this show.
Oh, thank you.
Then I realized that he's so good, I need to go the opposite direction and just be horrible. It'll amplify how good he is, and in a way, it'll actually make people appreciate him more. So I decided that's actually going to be my strategy here.
That I think that's a solid A++ strategy. I think that if you bomb so hard, bomb.com hard, I think it's good. I think that'll endear the audience towards you. So yeah, Gabe, like I said, is a storm chaser as well. He was with me and my friend Heather on our week-long chase in May. It was the coolest. And we saw some cool tornadoes. I was like, my tornado friend is now my podcasting friend as well.
And I got yelled at by Lisa. That was the best part.
You did get yelled at.
Very, very harshly too, by the way.
He told me to turn around when a tornado was surging towards us. And sir, that was not my prerogative. That's not what I wanted to do.
That's right. As chasers, last thing we wanted to do was to turn away from the tornado. So
no, always keep your eye on the prize. And by the prize, I mean this horrific, was it EF1? Damn it.
Yeah, it was almost 1 mile per hour off from being an EF2. I was really pissed about that, and I was wondering if there was somebody at the National Weather Service who had seen some of my tweets and was just pissed off at me, so they decided they weren't going to give it the EF2, because that sounds a lot cooler when you're telling people you saw a tornado.
Correct. That's true. And EF1 is like, and EF2 is like,
okay, we're getting close to being a significant tornado at that point, so... I have to say, too, this is a little bit strange for me because I've shared with you before, I listen to all my podcasts on a minimum of 2x speed. So I'm hearing your voice normal, and it's throwing me for a loop. I'm like, why isn't this lady speeding up? What's going on here?
I'm slow because I'm from Texas, so I'm just a slow Southern drawl speaking kind of lady. And also, listening to podcasts at 2x speed seems psychotic to me, but to each their own.
It's all about information ingestion. How much can I devour in a small amount of time?
You know what? Okay, I'm into it. I'll allow it. So Gabriel is on the roller coaster with me for this ride. He's hanging in there for dear life. I made show notes. Andy, I know you're listening. Man, show notes suck. Thank you for doing show notes every week. That's his like one custodial thing that he does is to help with the show. Well, it's not the only one, but that's one of the big ones he does. And I had to do it this week. I was like, man, this just sucks so bad. So
back
Andy,
in school
thank you for that. Back in school, exactly. So one thing I have to do real quick is do some Patreon shout outs. So to our high ranking officials, to our Patreon supporters, here we go. Executioner Michael, you sir are the bomb.com/ all that in a bag of chips. We love you. We thank you. We also need a show suggestion from you because executioner means you get to call the shots. Because you, Gabriel, by the way, called the shots for Doritos 3D versus Pop-Tart Minis.
That's right.
Wasn't that what it was? So that was his call. So he's got a little bit of clout on the show. Don't want to just throw that out there real quick. But executioner Michael, when you're ready, hit us, fam. And to our most honorable judges, we thank you for your service. And by service, I mean monetary support of the show and unwavering love. Judge Troy, doer of good, we thank you. Judge David, most honorable Patreon supporter, we thank you. And Judge Gabriel, well, here you are. You're on the show. So I guess you're ta-da! All right as well. Ta-da! You did it.
You did it.
Was it? You did it. That's right. And last but certainly not least, some of our bailiffs get some shout outs this week. Our most highest ranking bailiffs, here we go. Bailiff Evelyn, you are the bestest of the best. Bailiff Alyssa with the Next Session podcast, much love to you, my lovely dear. Bailiff Anthony, what it do, my brother, what it do? And then Bailiff Jake, with whom I have a new Deftones connection with, my dear sir, thank you. So those are just some of our bailiffs getting a shout out. I probably did the wrong ones. Andy is probably somewhere grimacing at the fact that I've messed it up, but LOL, my bad. So Gabe, you understand. Now we move into our things. This is a big one because it's not just coming on the show to talk about something. You had to do preparation, right? So thank you for that, because it's not just coming to talk about 90 stuff. You had to do some preparation. So as you recall from listening to the show at 2x speed, it is
was
now
some
time
hard
for
preparation,
things.
By the way. I did some preparation some H.
Did you? Ooh, preparation hardcore.
There you go.
No. Yeah, well, all right. Well, so I'm going to go first with our things to kind of weasel us into this. And my thing is, wow, this is a brain tickler for me. In the 90s, perfumes and scents were a big fucking deal, okay? Or maybe they just seemed as such because of the fact that, like, I was also at that time in middle school, and that's how you start developing your own self or, like, your brand, I guess. You have your own brand, the Lisa Randolph, which was my maiden name, Lisa Randolph brand, circa seventh grade. Not one to check out. I would not recommend. 0 out of 10 stars. But
oh, come scent, on.
No. I'll find pictures and share. Nobody wanted to buy that. Scent is a big deal, right? And it always was to me, and it always will be. So in the days of figuring out what scent I wanted to claim as my own before I landed on Clinique Happy for like the next 25 years of my life, I toyed with a lot of brands and a lot of smells. But the one I found and loved was a little assortment of scents from the baddest bitch brand in the 90s, Bonnie Bell. Okay? Now, this is probably something you know nothing about.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing about. So I bring this up because it was already on my radar to talk about, but then my buddy and fan of the show, Emily, if you're listening, hi, Emily. We were talking, and it was the coolest thing to remember that Bonnie Bell had this line of scents that dropped in the 90s called Bottled Emotions. Okay? And what was cool about this particular line was that they had like a different scent labeled for different emotions. So they had like some of them were like conscious, flirty, hyper, daring, playful, romantic, pretty. That's not an emotion, by the way.
I was going to say conscious. That's not, is that an emotion too?
Like, conscious is not one. Yeah. Maybe they meant like cognizant, but I don't think even that. But pretty, caring, joyful. So like there's so little information about these online that it was like I was having trouble even finding like a clear photograph of the lineup of the scents. So I was like, I'm just gonna have to fucking go with my memory here. But I distinctly remember that Flirty was my all-time favorite of all of them, which makes sense because I'm a total horrible flirt person. And it was like a silverish purple bottle. Okay.
All right.
And I cannot for the life of me recall the scent, but I wish I could, because like if I could just get one whiff of it, I would be thrown back to like seventh grade science class and be like, oh my God, I smell so weird. I look so weird. Life is weird. I'm in the 90s again. But it was like, it was my scent from about the fifth to the seventh grade. And like the best part about this line of perfumes was that it was like available at Walmart. So you could just like grab it whenever and you would be golden, and it was not expensive for a big ass spray bottle. You could just douse yourself in it and be like, it's cool. It's like $6 for like a 20-ounce spray bottle from Walmart. Like it's totally fine. But they also had like nail polishes of it and like lotions and glitters and shit. And man, I don't know, but like it's a deep cut feel. To be like do you remember what you wore like cologne wise in middle school? Was that a thing?
So I don't think I wore cologne in middle school, but I do
Axe
remember.
Axe body spray wasn't a thing yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember. Well, I think in late middle school, I believe it was, I had like, it was like Old Spice spray or something like that.
Okay.
It might not have been the late 90s, but I do remember the big problem was you would go to a friend's house. And yes. You'd want to play basketball or you'd want to play football or something. All right, so the magic of editing will hopefully have taken away my little snafu there. I lost my voice for a moment. But the story that I was trying to tell is that back when I was in middle school, early high school, the big issue was you wanted to be able to play all your sports games with your friends, but nobody had access to a car yet. So, like, once you got to a friend's house, you were stuck there. Like, you weren't going anywhere else for the rest of the day because your mom was like, fuck no, I'm not going to go pick you up and bring you back home to shower and then take you back out again. So you packed, like, something that you could spray on yourself and smell good. The problem was we all thought we smelled good. So we'd take our shirts off and have our wife beaters on and go play basketball in the front driveway. And then we'd go and we'd put our nice clothes on and try to go to the movies. And we'd just douse ourselves with whatever spray or cologne somebody had. And, you know, it could have been like Old Spice body spray. Could have been someone's like Polo Blue, whatever it was. And we thought we smelled perfectly fine. And I think just because the girls were so boy crazy, they didn't say anything. But I'm pretty sure we just smelled like sweat drenched in some sort of cologne or body spray. That's the only memory I have of using scents when I was a young kid.
I can confirm that that's exactly what it was like. But you know what? We were boy crazy and we looked past a lot and we continue to look past a lot. So you're welcome, men.
Yeah, I do always wonder how women just look past everything when we're just, you know, scratching our ass and picking our nose. But I suppose that's a conversation for a different day.
You know, we grin and bear it a lot. That's like our favorite thing, to grin and bear it. So that was my thing, the Bonnie Bell bottled emotions. I wanted to buy some off eBay, but it's like $60 for a lip balm. And I'm like, wow, that's stupid. So I'm not going to do it.
Collector's anyway. Item.
Not for me. For someone else, please. So
one other note I have in mind, though, from what you were talking about is Clinique mm-hmm. Happy. Yes. I don't think I smelled that on you. Not that I was attempting to smell you when we were storm chasing, but
right.
I don't think you were wearing
it. I was not
any.
Wearing it.
Okay.
I was not wearing it that week.
I didn't realize that you smell exactly like my mom. That's what my mom wears.
Clinique Happy? Yeah. I kind of stopped using it about a year ago. I moved on to this amber oil, and there's a whole saga around that. I will not get into it right now, but let's just say I'm losing my fucking mind about it. But I've been going back to Clinique Happy, but on the chase, I was wearing something different. So yeah, it is. I mean, Clinique Happy is a very strong smell.
It is.
You just
yes.
know. Yeah. You just know. So like, yeah, you would have known.
Right. Because I was like, I didn't remember Lisa reminding me of getting screamed at for, you know, 15 minutes for not cleaning my room. So.
Well, but I screamed at you for other stuff. So
this is true. This is true. So the prophecy was fulfilled.
This is true. So I'm gonna lob the football over to you now. I want to hear your thing because I know you were stoked about it.
I am so excited about my thing. And I'm actually a little disappointed in the answer that Andy gave when you asked if it was okay for me to do this thing. Because being a video game connoisseur, I cannot believe he hasn't played this game before. So Andy, I'm sure you're going to listen to this episode and never want to talk to me again because I'm sure I'll mess it up. But how have you not played Final Fantasy VII before, dude? Come on, man.
Is that what he said? He hadn't played it?
I think he said that, right?
He said he hadn't played it. Is that right? I think so.
I think that's what you told me.
I don't remember what he said exactly. But he was, I think, yeah, something like that. Whatever I copy and pasted is what he said. So it was a long night. But yeah, if he hasn't played it, that's all right. He was too busy doing every Mario game ever 17 times in a row. So.
Yeah, I think he was more of a Nintendo person. So I guess that could explain what was going on. There was sort of a dichotomy between the Nintendo and the PlayStation people that was very heated, especially back mm-hmm. when the PlayStation came out and doubled the graphics power of the Nintendo 64 and all that jazz and cartridges versus CDs. But Final Fantasy VII was where it was at. Released in 1997, still hailed to this day, almost 25 years later, as one of the greatest games of all time. It redefined the role-playing game genre. It popularized them on consoles worldwide, whereas before they had really been sort of a niche type of gaming experience. Mm-hmm. A lot of it confined to PC gaming. All of a sudden, the popularity just exploded. They were everywhere on consoles. But what it redefined for me the most was my sleep schedule. Because when I was a young kid, I used to have to go to bed, you know, 10 o'clock at night or whatever, 9:30 at night. And my parents would always be very judicious about this. And when I got Final Fantasy VII, it sort of coincided with me getting to put my PlayStation and the television down in my parents' basement, which they had just finished. And so what this meant was if I was super quiet and didn't make a noise, I held my pee and didn't go upstairs to disturb anybody, a lot of times they would just fall asleep like on the couch or go to bed without remembering to make sure I was tucked in. And I would just stay up until like 1 or 2 o'clock every night on school nights until I fell asleep playing Final Fantasy VII. So this is my fondest memory of playing Final Fantasy VII.
That is insane. 1 or 2 o'clock. So finally, this was, you said, what year was this? 90? four?
1997. So I was I was fifth and sixth grade during the time that I was playing this game a lot.
Oh my gosh. I can't say it to one or two, but that, hats off to you, buddy. Yeah. I don't recall ever playing Final Fantasy VII. What I do remember was the most bomb-ass soundtrack in the world. And I have no idea if you're going to touch on that, but
it's my last note. Yeah.
Well, so keep going. I don't want to over.
No. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. All I was going to say is that if people don't actually like the game or don't want to play the game, check out the soundtrack. It's from legendary producer whose name I'm going to butcher. It's Nobuo Uematsu, I think is how you pronounce it. But he's in Japan. He is known as like the Michael Jordan of video game soundtracks. And Final Fantasy VII, by many people, considered to be his masterpiece. It is just absolutely incredible.
What is the one track? I'll look it up while you're talking. I've got to figure out what was the track I remember from
One Final Winged Fantasy VII. Angel?
No.
Okay.
I may not. Well, none of these, as far as I can tell. I must be thinking of a different. Maybe I'm thinking Final Fantasy VIII. I might be.
Yeah, we don't talk about that one. Nine was good. 10 was good. 8.
Okay. All right, then.
I do have one little fun tidbit for you, because I already know that you disdain me and my nerd brethren. I remember having a conversation with you, actually, when we were driving, where I told you, like, one of the reasons I liked Coheed and Cambria and other bands like that is because they had, like, the concept fantasy setting story albums. Yeah. And you just kind of chuckled at me in disdain and, like, turned your head.
Yes.
So I was I was so into this game. I actually created like the Final Fantasy VII Bible out of the strategy guide, where I would write in the margins, just like, you know, a Bible study person would do when they were sitting listening to the preacher. I would write in the margins on every page of like little tips and tricks and secrets that I had found. And I cannot confirm this, but at one point, I had not found anyone else in any other forums, and this was still the early days of the internet, so there weren't a proliferation of forums like there are now. There was only a few dedicated places where you could go to discuss video games with other people. And I had found a combination of different settings within the characters that you could actually take the controller against the hardest bosses. You could enter the battle, put the controller down, like go out and get something to eat or go play sports with your friends or go to bed and wake up in the morning, and the battle would be over and you would have won. So I'm pretty sure I found this out before anyone else, or at least anyone else posted it. And that's kind of my little claim to fame thing, too. So that's how much of a nerd I was with this game.
One, I know you like your claim to fames. That's a good one. Claims to fame. I know you like those. That's dope as hell.
I was pretty excited about it.
That's a hella good sheet. And also, I think it's funny that you think people would take notes during Bible study on the side. That's really sweet.
Some
people did.
It's certainly indicative of my ascendant adolescent virginity. Like, it was showing its true colors at that moment, and basically it came into full force with my nerddom later in the high school years.
So briefly, Final Fantasy, I never played. What is the gameplay structure like? Are you playing as a character? Is it it's not battles, right? Or is it battles? It's not like what is it like?
You do have battles, so it's basically segmented into three different types or styles. The first one is like the world map, where you're running around and talking to people and discovering items. Then there's the battle screen, where you could be, if you're in certain places within the map, like not inside of a town, but you're outside in like an open area, you could get into a random battle all of a sudden, and you'll have to fight against an enemy. You can choose to run away or fight against them. Of course, there's boss battles that you can't run away from. And then the other one is there's like cinematic cutscenes that you can watch, where you don't actually have control of the characters, but some major plot device will occur that sort of pushes the story forwards. And it's sort of like RPG games. I don't know how they were before Final Fantasy VII, because frankly, I haven't played a lot of them. Andy would know a lot more about that than I do. But after Final Fantasy VII, they really became like this, like it's almost like a cinematic novel experience, where you're like half reading, half strategizing, and then there's like cutscenes of movies in between everything. So for a nerd like me, it pretty much checked every box.
That's awesome. I will look at videos of this. Now I'm really upset, because I was super stoked to talk about the soundtrack, and I'm pretty sure mine was Final Fantasy VIII. Now I'm such a ding dong.
Well, I do want to tell you that, and everyone else who's listening, if this does sound appealing to you at all, they actually finally, after over 20 years of people begging them to remake the game, they finally brought it into the future, and they are in the process of remaking the whole game right now. I think they've released the first portion of it as downloadable content on pretty much every console imaginable.
Well, that's dope as hell.
Yeah.
Look, your thing is so much better than mine. Mine was like some perfume from Walmart.
No, yours is awesome. Yours is
like one of the most like regarded game in history.
Well, the thing that came to my mind when you talked about how it's so hard to find a picture, you know how there's that one picture of like Bigfoot who's like turning, he's like turning and looking at the camera, that really famous yes. photo? I just imagine him like having a bottle of that in his hand too.
Yes, he's like, I think that if Bigfoot had a bottle of motion scent, I'm pretty sure he would also be flirty. He seems like a bit of a flirt. Maybe conscious as well.
So. He does seem very conscious. Bigfoot.
He does. Bigfoot, the conscious beast. So, all right. Well, that's the first half of our show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to some ads because you love that shit. You guys love it. And then we're going to come back with poll results from last week and then get into court case. This is a weird court case, folks. And Andy, I hope you approve. But if you don't, it's too late. It's already happening.
I am here for it. I am so here for it.
Sorry. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Thanks, guys. Hey, 90s Court listeners, Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90scourt. Sweet dreams. Well, hello again. You made it on the other side. We are in part two of this episode with our guest host, Gabriel. Thank you so much for hanging in there. Your thing was awesome. This court case is going to be insane. It's going to be fucking insane. And before we get into it, though, we have to do our admin stuff, which is poll results from last week. So I don't know how you would have voted if you voted. We did the experience of going into Pizza Hut in the 90s versus going into McDonald's in the 90s. And I have to know, which one would you vote for if you could go back to either in the 90s, Pizza Hut or McDonald's?
Oh, Pizza Hut, obviously. First of all, there was the buffet, which I wish they still had. That's like the best idea in the world. Don't make me wait for the pizza. Just have the pizza waiting for me. And second of all, they had video games that you could play. And they always had the really cool one where the screen was like a flat glass table and you could sit on either side with your friends and you could play whatever the game was on there. That was awesome.
Yes.
And then lastly, if you were a little kid, you know, back before hygiene was something people were concerned about, they had like the little table full of like kids' books and toys and stuff like that that they never cleaned or washed off. But you could grab a couple of those and take them back to your booth and wait for the pizza or wait for mom to go get your food, and you could, you know, read a Berenstain Bears book.
What the hell? My Pizza Hut never had books like that.
Yeah, ours was like or a full toys. Service, like a truck stop of Pizza Huts. It was pretty awesome.
So I think that like all Pizza Huts were just a little bit different, it sounds like. Like all like Andy's had a super special party room and mine had a jukebox and yours had toys, I guess. So let's hear how people felt. Well, Facebook was 71-29% in favor of Pizza Hut.
Yeah, not even
Instagram,
close.
Instagram, I know. Instagram was a little bit closer, 54-46, Pizza Hut. And then Twitter, 76-24% Pizza Hut. So it's a pretty clear winner, Pizza Hut, which is fair. I wanted to cover Pizza Hut. Andy was like, no, I'm covering it. I was like, okay, that's fine. But Pizza Hut is my baby. I had Pizza Hut last night for dinner. So take that, McDonald's. I don't care.
Issue one little addendum with McDonald's here?
Sure.
Because I have a little bit of a bone to pick with them as they currently stand. McDonald's is a shitty fast food restaurant. Everybody knows it, and people are perfectly fine with that. If you need to get something to eat really quickly and you don't have a lot of time, you just go there and you order your Big Mac, your large fry, whatever. I really despise how they've been trying to make things so much nicer with all the McCafe bullshit and everything in recent years. It's like, who are you fooling? You know, what are you trying to pull here? Like, we all, none of us think that this is a nice place. Why do you have televisions in McDonald's? Nobody's going there and sitting down long enough to even watch a show. I just, I don't like it.
Okay, wow, that's pretty aggressive. Because if I recall correctly, the McAfee
software. The John McAfee.
The John McAfee coffee of McDonald's was a saving grace for me when we were in Nebraska. Whatever the case is, I hear you. I validate you. That's fair.
I just don't like things pretending to be things that they're not. That's all.
My husband feels the same way. He I do like the cauliflower mashed potatoes. He was like, could you just kill me? As opposed
to yes, thank you. Yes, Jack is 100% correct.
He's like, no, just give me the mashed potatoes, woman. Like, well, just eat the crap. Don't give me the fake crap.
Yes.
Dressed up like crap. I was like, all right.
They have cauliflower crust pizza, too. Like, somebody should be hanged and quartered in the public square because of this.
This is now a cauliflower crust pizza stan podcast.
Cauliflower adjacent.
Cauliflower adjacent. Listen, okay. It is now, hold on, I got to do, I actually don't think this is an appropriate way to introduce the course case, but something just came across my desk.
Okay.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da. Well, because he says, but something just came across my desk. This is a court case about penises. It's not okay. It's okay. Correct. It's not okay. This court case, I'm sorry, Andy, you weren't here to stop me. Andy was busy this week. Well, the cat is away, the mouse will talk about penises, okay?
To be fair, this was actually my suggestion, so.
This was your suggestion, but you did not suggest my thing.
No.
So we are, one thing I've wanted to do for a long time, and I've never known how to bring it up, would be like some sensational news stories from the 90s, okay? And there were several really big ones, and I was like, I don't know if Andy's totally like into this idea. You suggested it, I was like, okay, this is my dude, we're doing this, right? So you want to cover the Monica Lewinsky scandal, which is fantastic. I'm so into that, talking about that scandal. And I'm covering the Lorena Bobbitt incident. I don't know what you want to call that. So two very different but sensational news stories from the 90s.
They were focused around the same area. So
the same general crotchal region is what's happening here. I don't mean for that to be what's happening, but it's what's happening. So deal with it, everybody. So as a good host, I'm going to let Gabriel go first. You are covering the Monica Lewinsky scandal, so good luck.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And so the saga begins.
Yes.
One little snippet from Wikipedia that I want to start with, because this just tickled me pink. The wide reporting of the scandal led to criticism of the press for overcoverage. This scandal is sometimes referred to as Monica Gate, Lewinsky Gate, Tailgate, Sexgate, and Zippergate, following the gate construction that has been used since Watergate. So, you know, I was thinking maybe you and I could have our own little poll here. Which one should we officially deem this? Is it Tailgate? Is it Sexgate? Is it Zippergate? I like all of those.
Why was Dressgate not considered? Was a huge component.
We'll be getting into that, because that was very interesting.
Well, someone got into that as well. But if I had to vote, I go Tailgate.
I like Tailgate too, because it's a real play on an already commonly used term. So I like the way that flows. Definitely,
I'm into it. Oh, that's our vote, Tailgate.
All right, Monica Lewinsky was hired as an intern during Clinton's first term in office, roughly in 1995. And according to her, later, she said that they had seven total encounters between 1995 and 1997.
Okay.
Now, what I found most interesting, because when this whole scandal was coming to light, I was only 11 or 12 years old, so I heard about it in the news coverage. I remember my parents being mortified that I had to basically know what was going on, because, you know, I was just a little kid at the time. But I didn't realize that the Monica Lewinsky scandal only came to light because Bill Clinton was already being sued in civil court for sexually harassing someone else, allegedly.
Okay.
Which, of course, was Paula Jones. I looked into that case, and apparently he did that while he was the governor of Arkansas. So this was, no one surprised, a long-standing problem with Bill Clinton, that basically wherever he went, some sort of sexual scandal seemed to follow him. She was a state government employee, and I don't want to speak to her intentions and say that she was lying, you know, hashtag believe all women, but
yeah.
She filed her lawsuit 3 days before the statute of limitations ran out. So that right there starts it off on a little bit of a wonky foot, because, you know, to me, that sounds like somebody might have been coaxing her a little bit, like, hey, you know, there's a bag to be had here, and you know, a little bit of publicity to be gained, because she came forward at the absolute last minute. So somebody was very aware of the legal statutes surrounding when she could actually come forward, and someone was whispering in her ears, would be my thought, at least. But
yeah,
all that aside, we're not here to talk about that case, but that is how all of this Lewinsky stuff came to be, because what happened was Paula Jones's legal team subpoenaed other women they believed Bill Clinton had had affairs with, and Monica Lewinsky was one of them. This is where things got really dicey.
Okay.
So Monica Lewinsky submits a sworn affidavit saying she has no relationship with the president. So obviously you can tell by the word sworn, it's a pretty big deal. You're in trouble if you lie on something that is sworn, affidavit or testimony. Mm-hmm. And good old Bill gave the exact same testimony during his deposition. That's where the famous line came from, actually. If you'll remember, he kind of chuckled and said, well, that depends on how you define the word is, what the definition of the word is. Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
Yeah, so he was being asked questions, and I don't remember the exact context of it, but basically he said, it depends on how you define the word is as to whether or not I actually did something wrong. So he's a master spinster, and I love Bill for that. You know, he's got it going on when it comes to playing his cards right when he's in high-pressure situations.
Yeah, okay. That's a pretty bold move to debate what the definition of is, but okay, that seems like a scrambling strategy, but yeah. I'm a little into it.
Great strategy. So
yeah,
here's what happened next. Apparently, there was internal pressure within the White House, no pun intended, given what was going on between Lewinsky and Bill Clinton at the time.
Right.
And Monica was relocated to the Pentagon. Basically, people were like, look, this is going to get out. Bill keeps fucking everything up. Like, we need to get her out of his line of sight and just sort of push her off to the side, out of sight, out of mind. So they put her in the public affairs office at the Pentagon, which is delightful, in my opinion, because she was technically just working in the private affairs office at the White House.
Yeah.
Get it? Ba-dum-tsh.
There you go.
Anyway, you were supposed to laugh at that. All right.
I don't get all the jokes.
All right.
All the time. I'm bad at this sometimes. I'm sorry.
She had wrote like a whole monologue up here, and you're like, ruined the joke. All right. You insert a laugh track when you go and do this in post-production. So
for sure.
She had a coworker at the Pentagon Public Affairs Office named Linda Tripp, who she confided in everything that had happened between her and Bill. And I think we all know that this is oftentimes the downfall in many situations like this, is people just cannot keep secrets. And, you know, Monica had just finished getting busy with the most powerful man in the world. She probably wanted someone to talk to. Tripp cozied up to her. They talked it all out. You know, Tripp had urged her to keep the dress that we'll talk about a little bit later, the semen-stained blue dress, as an insurance policy in case things went haywire. So this is where everything went really, really bad for good old William, because after Lewinsky had submitted her sworn affidavit saying she had not had sex with Bill Clinton, the president of the United States, and Bill testified the same thing, Monica Lewinsky tried to get Linda, her coworker, to lie under oath about the conversation she had had with her, because apparently Linda got subpoenaed to talk as well. Now, Lewinsky thought Tripp was her friend, and honestly, the entire scandal rests on Linda Tripp. That's a name that I wasn't even aware of until I started researching this, but this entire scandal would have been nothing if it wasn't for Linda Tripp, because what happened was she played one of the biggest fucking Uno reverse cards of all time, and instead of being Lewinsky's friend, it turns out she had been secretly recording all of their phone conversations with one another, And she sent the tapes to Kenneth Starr, who was investigating, who was an independent counsel investigating Bill Clinton for a bunch of other crimes that had nothing to do with the lawsuit.
Wow.
She also sent
Do you not secretly record your conversations with... I mean, I know that we're recording...
I'm secretly recording this conversation right now, yeah.
But in general, do you not just go about life with just like your phone recording in your pocket? You don't? That's just me? Okay, that's fine. That's cool.
Yeah, so not only did she send them to Kenneth Starr, she also sent them to a literary agent trying to get rich with the story.
Awesome.
So obviously there's her motivations right there.
Right.
And after this happened, obviously everybody knew they were caught at this point. And this also was the famous press conference where Bill Clinton came out and said, well, when the judge... you know, directed me to answer the question to whether or not I had had sex with Monica Lewinsky, I thought he meant regular sex, not oral sex. So that's why I lied and said that. Come on, it's a reasonable mistake anybody can make.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, the definition runs the gamut, truly. Truly? Maybe? I don't know. Yeah.
So, at this point, Monica Lewinsky knew she was in deep. She got a deal from the FBI to get immunity in exchange for her testimony. She submitted the now infamous semen-stained dress to the FBI for testing. And I had a little bit of a shocking moment when I was reading that at first because I thought it said for tasting. And I was,
salty.
I was a little bit taken aback by that, but you know. And the only thing that comes to my mind when I think about the dress is, are you a Pawn Stars fan?
I am not.
Okay, have you ever seen any of the videos of what they do?
I have.
Okay, so all I can think about is because that people will bring in memorabilia from famous people, and apparently this dress is still in someone's possession, still unwashed. I wonder what that would go for, what that conversation would be like. You take that in there and you go, I'm sorry, you know, the best I can do for it is, you know, I don't know how much, but I just, that's the only thing I could think of is I'd love to see the Pawn Stars episode with this blue dress.
It's priceless. Former president spunk. On a dress, it's pretty priceless, honestly. Also, I don't think I've looked up pictures of this dress. I don't know if I want to see pictures, but I think I'm looking at pictures of the dress right now.
I've seen dresses that are adjacent to that one before, so I don't think I need to look.
Oh boy.
All right, so moving forward, in the end, it was determined that Bill had committed perjury. The House of Representatives voted for articles of impeachment. But during the impeachment trial with the Senate, and everybody after what happened the last few years should be familiar with this process, the Senate cleared him of all the charges. So even though the House had voted to impeach, that didn't go anywhere. But in civil court, he settled the case with Paula Jones, that original case that had sparked this entire thing, for $850,000. He was stripped of his ability to practice law in Arkansas for 5 years after leaving office. And later, the Supreme Court of the United States stripped his ability to argue cases before them. So that was sort of the slap on the wrist that he got from all this, other than, you know, the massive embarrassment that comes with having to talk about whether you had oral sex or regular sex with your 22-year-old intern on national television over and over again.
First of all, let me backtrack. I, in my head, have a picture of what Monica Lewinsky looked like. She's much more beautiful, even in the 90s, than I have her branded in my brain. She was super beautiful.
What did I text you the other day?
You said she could get it.
There you go.
You said she could get it. And you were right. She could. Her hair was like hella big. And I think that's just jealousy on my part because my hair's kind of flat. So maybe I'm a little jealous of her like bump it inspired hair. But she was beautiful. And she is to this day a very beautiful woman. So Billiam, get it.
Billiam.
Get it, Billiam.
I like that.
Good, get it, Billiam. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. To be, what a circumstance, dude. To be an intern at the White House and be like, I did that. It's also on my dress. Also, I never washed the dress.
Yep.
What does that say about you?
Apparently, I was looking this up. She gave like a tell-all interview a few years back, and she said that this little graphic, but she gave the story that she didn't actually receive the stain until she was giving him a hug goodbye, which...
What?
So, and then she said she went out to dinner afterwards with her friends and didn't see the stain because apparently it wasn't super noticeable, and she thought it was just spinach dip that she had spilled on her shirt. and didn't realize didn't realize until later what it was.
Spinach dip? What the hell? Billiam, drink more water. Oh my gosh. What a foul thing to confuse it with. So we have gone to some very dark places.
I really appreciate Monica for giving the full details of everything. I found that to be incredible that I came across that interview with her. So,
from a hug, goodbye. Monica, Billiam, my goodness, you two. I bet they still text.
I bet they do. Absolutely. 100% still text.
Oh my gosh.
A few closing notes on this that were really interesting things that, that came up while I was researching. So Paula Jones went on to pose for Penthouse.
Of course.
I checked the photos out for research purposes only. And I can confirm that, you know, Bill probably made a good choice. So another thumbs up, I guess, to Billiam.
Okay.
And Larry Flint, you know, of Hustler fame, the guy who owns Hustler magazine. Yes. Mm-hmm. Longtime Clinton supporter. Put out a $1 million bounty for anyone who could provide information that would ruin any of the backers of impeachment in the House or the Senate. Now, I get it that politics are dirty and there's a lot of, you know, dirty money that gets thrown around trying to smear people. But when your entire scandal revolves around your inability to keep it in your pants, having the guy who runs Hustler taking the lead and trying to defend you in the public eye, probably not a great idea. Probably not, just not a little best. Bit of a PR slip up there.
Not the best, but you know what? It's no, was it it's Four Seasons Total Landscaping? Oh boy, I'll never forget that.
Yes,
I'll never forget that. Four Seasons Total Landscaping. I still have the shirt. Yeah, that's right, listeners. You forgot about that. I didn't forget about that. That's right. Four Seasons Total Landscaping. Deal with it, everybody.
Yeah, look, look. I lean right of center, and that still was one of the greatest fucking political debacles I've ever seen in my life. I could not stop laughing at that. That was just, if you couldn't laugh at that, then you just, you have no sense of humor.
Correct. It's one of the most amazing, beautiful things that has, I mean, like, it was a miracle. It was a miracle sent from the heavens to be like, everyone deserves a laugh. Here it is. This happened. This really happened.
And I think, yeah. I think the best part was the painted on brown hair leaking down the side of his head.
Like, poor guy was literally falling apart. I mean, not that I wasn't like doing similar leaking on myself from breaking down in 95.
I was
going to
say, be very
today.
Careful considering the context of this episode, saying things like that. But anyways, I continue.
So thank you for that. The Monica Lewinsky scandal has been something I've been wanting to bring up forever. I found someone that wanted to do it. Let's do it. We did it. Thank
I have no,
that.
No, no.
That
I have two
amazing.
More. I have two more.
Two oh, yeah, more two more. Oh,
yeah, two more.
Oh, go, go,
points.
Go, go.
How
sorry.
Dare
go
you
ahead.
Cut me
go.
Off? Jeez. All right.
My goodness. My word.
So apparently there was a Republican congressman who was expected to become the next Speaker of the House. So this is like a big deal. Who was taken down by Larry Flint's PR stunt. They actually found out proof of a scandal where he had been having an affair and he was forced to step down. But he, oh no, reversed that shit himself. He stepped down willingly. And then he said, well, I just did it. So now Bill should do it too. It was like the ultimate, like, sacrifice the pawn to try to take down the queen type thing. It was pretty awesome. I love the strategy there. So some bonus points for that one. And there were a couple of others, I guess, that got exposed. But nothing happened there. They didn't step down and everybody just forgot about it. And the last thing I want to say is, like I mentioned a moment ago, I do lean right of center. But in my opinion, this whole thing was totally bogus from the very beginning. There's a lot of reasons why you may or may not like Bill Clinton, Democrats, Republicans, whatever you are. But let me tell you something. Even the good old book, the Holy Bible, tells us that when somebody is in a position of tremendous power and authority over other people, what did they used to do to the kings of Israel? What did they used to do? They gave them a fucking harem because they knew that those guys with all that fucking power weren't going to be able to keep it in their pants. So all I'm saying is that maybe we should revisit some of those old biblical time things instead of trying to, you know, call everybody out and be all moralistic and everything. I'm just saying. I'm speaking pragmatically and I'm just saying.
Did they also say in the Bible that you must always hug someone goodbye to ensure the proper transfer of spinach dip?
So that is my court case. Like you said, it had to be done. I appreciate everybody who made it through that. And if you did make it through it, get ready and strap yourself in because the next one's going to be even worse.
Strap yourself in or strap one on because, wow, this gets really bad. I'm so sorry. So today I'm covering something called The Cut Heard Around the World.
That's better than Tailgate. The Cut Heard Around the better World.
I don't know. Tailgate's pretty good, but The Cut Heard Around the World. Heard. So on June 23rd, 1993, a woman named Lorena Bobbitt did what I think a lot of women have fantasized about doing, and that was she cut off the apprentice of her husband, okay? And her husband was John Bobbitt, okay? Was John Bobbitt. They're not together anymore. Yeah. I don't think you come back from that.
No.
I don't think you're like, I think we can get past this. I do not think that you can get past this, John and Lorena. I do not think that you
never,
can.
Never, ever, ever, ever getting back together.
That's exactly right. So, all right. On a serious note here, there are a lot of things to unpack here because it is not that cut and dry, but there are things that I can make fun of here and there are things that I cannot make fun of here. So, for instance, from the actual court case on this, there are accusations of rape, which are not funny. Rape is not funny.
No.
Never has been, never will be. I'm not in the least making fun of that. I am, however, finding tremendously amusing the fact that a woman in the 90s got so mad at her husband that she looked at the situation at hand and said, it's time to cut that dick off.
That like, is
that
very
to me
funny.
Is funny.
Yes.
That's tremendously funny. That's where you get to. So I'm sorry. I actually wrote time to cut off is pecker. I don't recall the last time I used the word pecker. So I needed to make sure that I came back to that in my notes. So
yep.
The insanity does not stop at the things that I've just said. Okay. It snowballs into a very weird storyline that goes places nobody wanted it to go. But we're going to get to that. So for the actual backstory here, according to Lorena Bobbitt's testimony, they had been married about 4 years when this incident occurred. And she is a very small woman. The documentary I was watching was like an A&E documentary about this. They said that she was 92 pounds at the time. That is so small. That
is she a gymnast or something?
Woman. No, she was, I think I heard she was Puerto Rican or from Ecuador. I don't remember what it is. She's something, but she's just naturally small, just okay. Naturally a small person. Right. So during her trial, she accused John of multiple instances of sexual assault. Again, not funny, but per her testimony, the evening this one all went down, he'd been out till about 3 a.m. with a friend who was staying with him at the time. Okay, that seems like a cool friend. They were in the process of separating, John and Lorena were, and that evening there was another incident, and this time Lorena just fucking broke, all right? She was done. And so she said she went to the kitchen to get like a drink of water or something after this all occurred. She saw this big-ass knife just sitting there, and she was like, this is it. And she grabbed it and took it to where John was sleeping, pulled back the covers, and whack.
Okay, we have to stop. We have to stop there for just a second.
Of course.
In the testimony, was there like in-depth modeling of exactly how this occurred? Because you're no stranger to the...
Where are you going to go with this?
You're no stranger to that anatomy. So you can't just like make a clean... You can't make a clean strike, especially if certain criteria haven't been met. So I'm wondering, like, how did she not, like, cut his leg off? Or did she, like, kind of, you know how you, like, kind of, like, pick it up and...
You kind of have to saw. Yeah, I assume there had to have been some sawing.
Did you, like...
I hate to... Gosh,
yeah,
this
did
is
you,
so
like,
graphic.
Hold it taut and then just, like, slice to the... Like, as a horizontal slice? Or... I'm really interested more than anything else to know how it went down.
Okay, the documentary I watched did not cover that, mercifully. Okay. I chose not to dig that far into it because I don't need to know that hellscape information. But from John's testimony, what he said was that he felt a few tugs and then excruciating pain. So that to me, because he was super drunk at the time. He was super drunk, total blackout. Men, you're probably recoiling everywhere. If you're so drunk that all you feel is a tug and then excruciating pain, like, okay, that went pretty far. Like, that escalated quickly. But tug implies to me, like there may have been some sawing. Because, like, the picture of the blade didn't look like it was enough to just, like katana its way through that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was a pretty substantial butcher knife or something, but it wasn't. I mean, it could be.
Yeah,
gold.
Normally you gotta
I'm
have,
hurting my own feelings.
Normally you have to have like a cutting board for this kind of action, like hold it down taut and then just Yeah. The...
Did she also bring some tongs? Like, I don't know what she did, but so she does this. She cuts off John Bobbitt's penis, and then she gets in the car and she drives away.
All right.
And about a block or so from the home, she's like, "Oh shit, I still have his severed penis in my hand." So she rolls down the window and just yeets it out the window into a field.
What?
She threw his dick out the window.
Why did she still have it?
Because she was so shocked about what she just done that she was like, "I gotta get out of here." Because he, I mean, he woke up. You know, someone cut off his dick. So he woke up, and I guess he was mad. And so
I don't think he was
like,
mad. I'm going to go out on a limb and say mad's not an emotion at that point that you're feeling.
What? What was he?
Well, I would think you would just like terrified, in shock, recoiling in horror. I can't think I'd be mad at that point. Like that.
I don't know. He just looked at the situation, looked down, and was like, "Oh, fiddlesticks.
Fiddlesticks. It'll grow back.
I've lost my penis." So she's got it in her hand. She freaks out when she realizes that, and she throws it into a field, okay? And, oh my gosh, this is just the most absurd story, because, like, they found it. They, you know, I don't recall if she called the cops or he did. I don't remember. But they go searching in this field for a severed penis. They find the penis, and they reattach it over the course of a 9-hour surgery. Okay. And he was like, "Yeah, go ahead."
I have one question. How is it still? How do they know the penis was in the field?
She told them.
She just straight up told them, like, "This is where I threw it."
Yeah, yeah. She was like, "Yeah, I threw it like on the corner of this field and this one." It must not have been very far from home. I want to say she was cooperative because she wanted to like have him be understood, like, this dude's an abuser, like. And yeah, cut his dick off. Who wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happened. So they found it. They reattach it. The trial goes on, and they try John Bobbitt for rape. He is found not guilty, because at the time they were just like, "Well, husband and wife, is this, you know, a thing that can happen or something like that?" And then the same prosecutor goes on and tries Lorena herself for wounding John, and she's also found not guilty. So everybody's kind of like, "What the fuck? What are we like? No one's got nothing here." And so the situation that came here is like there's a whole current of like a woman's movement with this trial, because, and like I don't want to focus on that per se for the show, but sure. I do want to mention it because it's important for the moment for women in terms of like, we're not taking this shit anymore. Because a lot of women were like, "Yeah, fuck you. Like, you can push us to the edge, and we will stab your ass, and we will cut your dick off." But then there were a lot of men like, "Well, you can't just like go around cutting off dicks." And
correct.
It's like, well, correct. You can't. Well, maybe you can. Try us. I've tried one person.
I checked the rule book. Can confirm. That's correct. You cannot do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know what rule book you're playing by, but Lorena has a very fun rule book, and she said, "No, I'm going to do this." So what I do, where I do want to go from here, is that the shock does not stop with the things I've already said. After the penis cutting incident, John Bobbitt tried to monetize the situation, and he started a band called The Severed Parts. and he did this in order to help pay for his mounting medical and legal bills, but the band sucked and it made no money for him.
Some might say it was a one dick wonder.
Very good. I actually want to look this up on YouTube and see if I can find any like low down recordings of this. However, in September of 1994, now, remind you, this incident happened in June of 93, September of 94, just a year, like less than 18 months later. He appeared in an adult film called John Wayne Bobbitt Uncut, which is like, bro, are you even healed up enough for this? And like, I haven't watched it. I can't say I'm not going to watch it.
I was going to say research purposes, Lisa.
But I don't know. I don't think that's something I want to see with my eyes. But you know, even if he wasn't healed up enough for that, fear not, because he starred in yet another adult film called Frankenpenis in 1996. So this is where things get a little messy for John Bobbitt, because he punched a young woman named Christina Elliott in Vegas in 1994, which did him zero favors. But don't worry, he got like 15 days of jail time for that. So finally he served something. But then in 1998, the fun kept going for John. He appeared on the World Wrestling Federation program and then moved to Vegas and began doing all sort of random ass odd jobs. Like, I think he was like a delivery guy. He did a lot of weird random shit for a while. And it was like a pizza delivery guy or something. I was just like, what the hell's happening here? But like, I guess it just goes to show that no matter what sexual organ of yours someone cuts off, you may still be able to show up on WWF and also make sex tapes. So,
well, yeah, really, this is I know it started off as a story that was very graphic and had a lot of even more dark undertones to it, but this is like this is a real testament to the human story. I mean, what a great message for young kids. That with a little bit of, with a little bit of perseverance, and you keep your head up, you look at things on the bright side, and you can really achieve your dreams, even if things, you know, in the moment where you're in the ER and you're, you know, trying not to die from massive blood loss, they might seem out of reach, but you know, you can do anything out there, kid.
You get, yeah, it might seem out of reach. Well, not enough for a reach around for old John Bobbitt. Old boy. I, again, like I said, nothing about the lead up to this is funny. However, throwing a severed penis out the window, that is comedy, my friend.
It also has...
I have a lot of questions. I have so many questions, but I cannot address them on the show. I just have so many questions.
It also has some really profound historical undertones, because the Egyptian god Horus, who was born to the goddess Isis, after she retrieved all the dismembered body parts of her murdered husband, Osiris, except his penis, which was thrown into the Nile and eaten by a catfish.
Awesome.
And in order to conceive her son, she fashioned a phallus to give him a new one. And, you know, then all of the Egyptian gods were born out of that. So, I mean, it's a lot of relating, overlapping things here.
So we have an ancient Egyptian strap-on.
Yes.
What you're saying.
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
That's what I got from that. Awesome. I love it. I love it more than I can possibly make clear on this show, but I'm glad that we are here for this. I feel like I'm really proud of the energy we created in the studio today.
Yes, and I wanted to give one, you know, unsolicited piece of advice to anyone out there, because you're right. Like, there's nothing to laugh about, but if something is, you know, horrible in your relationship, I'm going to urge everyone to not cut off their partner's penis. Because I feel like you lose a lot of the moral high ground at that point. Might have been one of the reasons why he wasn't convicted. Which, you know, if he did something wrong, was very unfortunate. So that's just my piece of advice. Just don't, no dismembering penises. Probably things will work out better for you.
I'm going to go ahead and go out on another limb and say cut off all the dicks that you want. Because fuck them.
Oh, wow. That's my piece of advice. Then I might have to respond in kind with a corkscrew. So...
All right. Andy is officially canceling the show after this. He's never going to talk to me again. Andy, I'm sorry for the energy I've created in the studio today, but I did it. My vibes were off at the Applebee's. Listen, let's round out the show. First of all, before we do our send-off of Where to Find Us, I want to say thank you again to Gabriel for coming onto the show. You were magnificent. Like I said, I've guest starred on a couple of podcasts before. They've required zero to no effort to prepare to be on them. This one took a lot of time for you, so I appreciate that, because I know that you've got kiddos and you've got a whole life going. So thank you for that.
Well,
a round of applause here.
This has been a lot of fun, and I am so sorry, Andy.
Yeah. We should all apologize. So, I'm going to go ahead and take us out real quick. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court. We are on Instagram at 90s.court. We have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/90sCourt. We also have a merch store if you need some stuff, some swag, tpublic.com/user/the90sCourt. And as always, if you want to be so awesome, you could leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and Podchaser. That would be the coolest. I'm going to put you on the spot. Andy does it to me every week, and it's the hardest part of the show. Do you have any final remarks?
Just stay in school, always chase your dreams, and, you know, never give up and all that jazz.
Never stop chasing, right?
Never stop chasing. There.
Never stop chasing. That's one of the slogans in the chasing community. We get it. We get it. You get it. Gabriel, thank you so much. Super thrilled to have had you on the show. Can't wait to be back on the road next year. We're going to catch some naders. Going to be great.
Oh, yeah.
Going to be good. All right. So thank you guys so much for listening. And as always, stay rad. Woo.